Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
Predatory marriages. What is that all about? Could there be such a thing? Marriage. The word marriage connotes a wedding ceremony, happiness, the joining of two hearts, the celebration with their family. And then we've got this word in front of it called predatory. How could that possibly have anything to do with a marriage? Somebody preying on another person in the capacity of a marriage ceremony? The answer is yes. It happens. And I'll tell you, about 10 years ago, I was the chair of the OBA family law section, and we had a number of people come to us and say, how come we don't have an area of law called elder law? And because we've got, you know, family law issues, trust issues, wills and estates issues, real estate issues, all pertaining to people that are seniors, but we don't have an area of law that sort of brings it all together. And within that same conversation was the subject matter of predatory marriages. And I said, what's a predatory marriage? And a predatory marriage, as I was told then, which is quite frankly the same of what it is today, is a situation where an older person, particularly somebody that's living, say, in a nursing home or living on their own, but their adult children have arranged caregivers or a caregiver for them. And so whether they're in a nursing home, a retirement home, or living on their own in their own home, and there are either one or many caregivers, there have been situations where the caregiver and the senior begin a romantic relationship. Now, let's not get carried away. 95-year-old grandma or grandpa may not necessarily be doing the salsa with the caregiver. They may not even have much physical sexual contact, but there could be other versions of romantic relations, like just talking or holding each other's hand or maybe having a nap together or sharing feelings. And so some of these arrangements have led to the elderly person, in some cases, wanting to marry the caregiver. Now, in some cases, they want to marry the caregiver because the caregiver wants them to marry them. And in some cases, it's simply because they've got a couple of years left and they would like the last few years of their life to be one where they have more love in their lives. It's hard to really distinguish between the two. But along come the adult children sometimes, and they found out that elderly mom or dad went down to City Hall and got married. They may have taken a Wheel-Trans, they may have taken an Uber, they may have gone by car. Either way, they find out after the fact that the caregiver could be a male, could be a female, and the father or the mother got married. And under the law, for many decades, the law said that when a couple marries, the will is null and void. So the will could have said, everything goes to my adult children, then that person marries the caregiver, and then all of a sudden, that will is nullified, and then who stands in first position to the estate? The husband or the wife. And so this actually happens. Now, the difficulty is distinguishing between those cases where the elderly person wanted it versus the cases where the caregiver was a predator who took advantage of the elderly person. And those are really hard cases. And they become extra hard if the kids found out after mom or dad passes away, because now the evidence isn't there. If And quite frankly, there are cases where they find out while mom and dad are alive, but after that the elderly person has been declared incapable under the Substitute Decisions Act and under a capacity assessment, because maybe their dementia has risen to the point where they simply cannot be relied upon in terms of whatever it is that they're telling their children. And they could be telling their children that they, you know, that they love the caregiver, or that they don't love the caregiver, when in fact it's the exact opposite. So we've got really difficult cases. And before I turn this over to you, Leanne, and hear your reactions to this and what your thoughts are or questions are, I do want to leave the viewers with a punchline. This has become such an issue that it was elevated to the provincial government, and the provincial government changed the law so that it says that marriage does not nullify a will. Now, I'm not an estates lawyer, and I don't want anybody to rely on my advice. And if anybody or a child of a senior has any questions about this, there are some very, very expert lawyers in the subject of wills and estates and predatory marriages that Leanne and I would be happy to refer you to. But we did want to talk about what happens when somebody marries an elderly person, marries their caregiver, and what does that do to the estate? And I'll come back to that, but I just want to hear from Leanne on this first.
Yes, I find a really interesting topic. It's one that I have to confess I have not dealt with at all over my career. I haven't had a situation where somebody was, you know, where maybe an adult child was saying their parent was victim of a predatory marriage, or where that term was even, you know, thrown around. So I don't have any direct dealings with it. It does seem to me, though, like a very complicated issue, because, you know, sometimes when people are older and, you know, maybe their health isn't their best and they have a caregiver, they can still be just fine in their mind. You know, maybe their body physically isn't doing so well and they need a caregiver, but their mind is good. And, you know, their adult children maybe aren't coming around or visiting as much as they wish they were, or maybe there's some strained relationships there, or, you know, there's some animosity from the elderly person. And, you know, they have this caregiver who's with them every day. And, you know, I think it's quite possible they could naturally develop feelings and feel like, you know, this person's here for me every day. They're taking care of me. Where are my children? They don't even come and see me. And that person, you know, could decide to marry them, being a very sound mind, and want to leave their estate or a chunk of it, you know, to that caregiver, because maybe they feel wronged by their adult children not coming around.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a very possible situation. But then, you know, the flip side is it's very possible that, you know, you could have a caregiver who's in it for strategic reasons and is predatory and takes advantage of an elderly person who isn't fully, you know, there mentally and doesn't fully understand what's going on and is very vulnerable. And you have adult children who are in their life and who, you know, always had a good relationship with the parent, and they're, you know, because they work and have their own children and have their lives, you know, they're not there day to day, maybe, which is why they've hired the caregiver to help. But they are involved in their parents' life, but they don't fully know what's going on with this caregiver, perhaps creating this relationship and manipulating their elderly parents. So, you know, if I was an adult child in that situation, I would certainly be very upset if something like that arose. And it does seem like it, you know, if there hasn't been some previous finding that the parent was not of sound mind and not didn't have capacity to be making decisions, it might be hard after the fact to prove when that actually started. And if there's already been a marriage, did it start before or after the date of marriage?
And, you know, we talk about the word capacity like everybody knows what that word means. And the word capacity is actually a very large body of law. And the subject matter of capacity touches so many different areas of law. For example, in criminal law, There is a whole body of law dealing with the subject of whether a person can stand trial, whether the person is guilty because of their actions being volitional, or whether they're guilty because of an act that did not have intention because they didn't form the intention. There are many people that are found guilty by reason of insanity, or whatever the current language is.
Not guilty by reason of insanity.
Not guilty, that's right, pardon me. And so this touches many areas of law, but let's bring it back to family law and estates law. So there is a certain legal test that a person has to meet in order to, for example, write a will. If the person that writes the will did not have the necessary legal capacity to write a will, that will is null and void. And so, for example, right now I'm in the process of redoing my wills, and my wills lawyer has set up a series of meetings with me. All of them are being video recorded, mainly as a defensive mechanism to ensure that whatever instructions that I give will not be challenged by people after I'm gone. And therefore, there will be evidence to substantiate the fact that I was of sound mind and that I asked questions, asked for advice, got advice, and made very volitional decisions with respect to my estate plan. So just like there is a requisite legal requirement for capacity to write a will or capacity to write a power of attorney, there is also a legal capacity to marry. And this is where things get funny. The capacity to do a will is higher than the capacity to marry. Some would think, well, first of all, how do you measure that? That's number one. Number two is why? Why wouldn't it be the same? Why would there be different mental capacities? Well, to know the answer to that would take a couple hours, but I'm going to give you a couple cases to read. And in 2017, one of the best court decisions dealing with a predatory marriage was in the case of Hunt and Warrod. Hunt as in H-U-N-T, Warrod as in W-O-R-R-O-D, 2017. And if you were to go onto Canley.org and keyword search Hunt Warrod 2017, you'll read the decision of a elderly man that married a very young woman who, when the kids found out, they brought an application to set aside the marriage. And they were successful, by the way. And recently, well, I shouldn't say so recently, the matter came up again in a court of appeal decision, which was an appeal of a trial decision in the case of Tanti and Tanti, T-A-N-T-I, and that was in 2021. And I'm just going to read for you all a small little passage on the subject of capacity, because it's interesting, because effectively what happens is these judges are asked to cancel a person's decision to marry. Well, how crazy is that? And are we now getting into ageism? Oh, so if you're 30 years old, you can make the decision to marry, but if you're 80, you can't? And who bears the onus of proving whether the marriage is valid or not valid? I can tell you a lot of my younger clients would love nothing more than to have their marriages invalidated. It would make their divorce that much cheaper. But that's not the issue for today. So let me just tell you, in the case of Hunt and Warrod, it stated, quoting from other cases, of course, in determining legal capacity, courts are asked to balance individual autonomy against the vulnerability that can come with age or disability. This is quoting from Hunt. The overarching goal is to ensure that people retain decisional autonomy in as many domains as possible, even if they must be protected from harm in others. And now they're quoting a paper written by Kimberly Whaley, who is a colleague of ours and one who actually has written and spoken significantly on predatory marriages. Continuing, indeed, people with mild cognitive impairment, dementia, or Alzheimer's can be capable decision makers depending on the situation. The determination of legal capacity is fluid. It is a decision, time, and situation specific. Medical legal capacity is a social construct that requires the trier of fact, the judge, to take into account factors that go beyond simple medical assessments of capacity. Or to put it in simple English, Leanne and our viewers, every case has its own unique set of facts. And if you found out that your elderly mom or dad, while you were living in Eastern or Western Canada and thinking that you were paying the bills at the nursing home and paying the nanny who was coming and visiting this person two or three or four times a week, and then all of a sudden you found out that they got married either before your mom lost capacity, after your mom lost capacity, after your mom passed away, this is news. And now you got to deal with it because all of a sudden, whatever that estate was is being divvied up very differently. And this has, of course, resulted in some litigation, and I've mentioned that to you. And if you are the adult child of one of these parents and you want to challenge the validity of that marriage, you are hiring a lawyer like Ian Hall or Kimberly Whaley to be able to assess the case, collect the evidence, and determine whether there is a strong case to be made that this marriage should be canceled so that the estate that pre-existed the marriage follow the estate plan that pre-existed the marriage.
Yeah, I think that's the best piece of advice is to, you know, consult someone who specializes in this area. And, you know, the consequences could be significant if this has happened. So it's something you definitely want to speak to a lawyer about if you think that it's happened to your parent.
Absolutely. Well, lovely conversation about something unlovely,
yes,
but definitely necessary. So we'll see y'all next week.
Yes, thanks everyone. We'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.